Ladies and gentlemen, it's time. It's time. I am in San Francisco, but the show is still going because you know what technology did? It allowed me to travel and do this show. The sound may be a little bit different until tomorrow, but guess what? I'm here and we are doing it. What are we here doing? Bam. Browner and Lawhead. I'm John Browner. I'm joined by Jason Lawhead, comedian. I mean, I would say he's a well-known American comedian. I almost called him a global comedian, but he's a well-known American comedian, Jason Lawhead. And we are Browner and Lawhead. We are brought to you by the Mightier 1090. You can find us on YouTube at Kaplan and Crew with the number and the date in front. And you can also find us in the iTunes podcast store because I finally, after, I don't know, a month and a half, figured out how to say all that in order. Jason, what's up?
What up? What you doing in San Fran, man? I didn't know you were up there.
Living my best life. Getting nice. Loose. Getting loose, being free.
There you go. You're on the road this time. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Looking good, sounding good. How's that haircut holding up? Good?
The haircut is still there somehow, yeah, magically. I picked the wrong place to go after a haircut, though. I can tell you that. San Francisco is not a place to be walking around with your hat off.
It's chilly up there.
It's a little nippity-nip-nip-nip. But I like it because you get to expand your style. You can wear jackets and sweaters. I was in Levi yesterday, and I saw a jacket that I would only own if I lived here. So, yeah.
Yeah, San Francisco, I know it's gotten a little, you know, testy over the last few years with the homeless and everything. But I will always say, man, you know, top three places I like to visit in this country always has been San Francisco. Always have loved going up there to the Bay Area. And feeling the just difference. You know, it's just a different kind of feeling up there. And I will say this, as a kind of, you know, East Coast more kind of a guy, Cleveland is more, I always say Cleveland's more leans towards an East Coast than a Midwest, even though they technically call us Midwest. I think it starts in Chicago. But I will say for all those like old traditional cities that love their sports, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Philly, New York, East Coast stuff, the West Coast doesn't have, San Francisco feels as a fan base, the Bay Area is the closest to me as true kind of real old school fans on the West Coast. That's always been a little, I feel like they've just always had a little extra mustard than the LA, San Diego, Port, you know, West Coast, kind of Arizona, Phoenix. I've always felt like the Bay Area fan has had that old school kind of toughness. And maybe it's because of the cold and the blustery. I think Ernest Hemingway one time said the most beautiful winter
I've ever had was a summer in San Francisco.
San Francisco, yeah, I think it was that. Yeah,
I was talking about that the other day.
Oh, okay.
I think that I've had the pleasure of the same company in where I'm now in Seattle, and they're very similar cities. So I enjoy San Francisco almost the same amount that I enjoy Seattle. But I will tell you this. This is my eighth time here. I can't live here.
No, I couldn't live there.
I can't live here. And it's not what you think. This is an island. It's up. It's not out. You can't go out. You can only go up here. I don't mind the homeless people because they don't mess with me. They're not aggressive to me, obviously, because my physical stature, it's kind of handy for once. But everybody's on top of everybody here. And I mean, everybody's on top of everybody. I need space.
No, I love visiting. And I told my wife one day, if I was ever just like, you know, F you money, where, you know, you could just, I would definitely buy something.
Yes.
Just to go when I did go visit, live in a swank place, high rise or something along the bridge or whatever, you know, near the, you know, park. But I mean, that's just a great place to visit. I've always loved it. The food's great. The air is great. And the sourdough bread, man, you can't beat that.
So let's get to some things that you can beat. We're going to talk about, we're going to talk about the Chargers. We're going to talk about the Rams. I'm going to talk about football in general because obviously Monday here is always a really big football show because the season is provides us with so much content. But every now and then we get these stories that kind of bump in between what we normally cover. And this week, this Monday for us, for Browner and Lawhead, we're in a situation where something bumped the NFL in a small portion. And it's not coaching hirings this time. It's San Diego State. Look, I'm not going to bore you with the details of what happened in that game, because if you were one of the people who unfortunately drove up to see that massacre, sorry. They've got to do something. They got to get out of that conference. And I know this is a dead horse that we're about to beat for a couple of minutes, but if you're going to tell me that you can win 11 to 12 games, because they have 11 games now, let's say if they win the bowl game, they won 12 games, and there's a good chance they won't be ranked in the top 25. What are you doing as a football program? Like, if you're an 11-win team and you cannot get into the top 10, what are you doing? You're really wasting time as a program, because what are you getting out of your what you're doing in the Mountain West Conference? Where is it getting you? And I'm not saying you got to get into the Pac-12 or Pac whatever it is at this point, but the Big 12 has openings. Are you not trying to get into that? Like, you're constantly going to be shut out. Now, if you want to say, okay, well, San Diego State isn't on par with the Power 5 conferences. Well, you can't be if you don't get in it.
Right.
Until you get in the Power 5, you can't compete with the Power 5. So I definitely don't want to hear that excuse, because you will get those athletes once those athletes are able to compete against other Power 5 schools, say the Big 12. But if you don't do that and you stay in the Mountain West, That stadium that they built, what is that for? What is it? Soccer? It'll be for soccer.
Yeah, I mean, I like a move to maybe penetrate into the Pac-12. I think
that, I agree.
I think that it's there for the taking right now. I think the football and the basketball programs are at the ability. What you just said. Then what are you doing it for? Like, put them in there, enter them in, and especially if these conferences decide to expand, once there's the shuffle. If the Pac-12 is going to get bigger, if the Big 10 is going to get bigger, if the Big 12 is going to get bigger, you know, the SEC is obviously committing to getting bigger. We'll see what the parameters are on how big these conferences get. But if there is going to be some talk of that, get into that talk now and start trying to penetrate that Big 12, because it's only going to make your basketball and football programs matter.
Right.
Matter. And you know what? Come on. San Diego should be one of the easiest places to recruit, right? You got to believe if you're San Diego State and you can move into a power conference like the Pac-12 and tell kids in basketball, recruiting and football recruiting, hey, you're going to be on TV, you're going to be playing UCLA, you're going to be playing, Washington, you're going to be playing Washington State, you're going to be playing Arizona, we're going to be doing this in football and in basketball. Those definitely the basketball program's ready to at least get in there and elbow around that competition and hold its own and potentially recruit its way into a top tier team in the Pac-12. And the football program, meaning that, hey, look, it should be only easier to recruit if you get them in the Pac-12 and they that they're going to be playing on ABC and ESPN all the time.
I think one of the bigger, and again, whether this will happen or not is happenstance, but I think the biggest argument that if you're J.D. Wicker or you're whomever is in charge of making this happen, you can argue that the basketball program's been the best basketball program in California. Like, you can legit argue that. And so
since Fisher got there consistently, yes.
Yes. And so you can argue that you would be bringing a legit team to the conference to raise its profile from a basketball standpoint. Now, from a football standpoint, you're just taking somebody who you can beat up on, whatever. But if you're going to make this about moving forward, San Diego State's baseball program has been top-notch.
Mm-hmm.
San Diego State's basketball program has been top-notch. So they can carry their weight when it talks from an overall aspect of can you compete at that level. So they can pull their own weight. It's just a matter of can you get in when football is the biggest revenue builder in those sports.
Hey. They've got it. They've already got a Pac-10 or a Pac-12 type basketball facility that ranks as a top that's a power conference facility for basketball. They're about to open a top-notch football modern. It may not be one of the bigger stadiums, but it's going to have the modern-esqueness and the facilities around it to really draw players to say, hey, look, this is a sexy place to play. We're going to have all the modern practice and lifting and conditioning facilities. And we're in San Diego, California, and it lines right up with all that conference with the travel and whatnot. But, unfortunately, that program took a hit recruiting wise with this game over the weekend that was kind of a shocker, not only to San Diego State fans that really expected a better outcome, let alone effort, but it kind of, it reverbed across the country when you looked at where they were and the chance that they had to win that conference and kind of flex their muscles a little bit. And then it kind of, boy, what a just deflating loss.
I thought that was one of the worst losses across the country.
Yeah.
Come championship weekend. Like you've had such a great season and you had an opportunity to really stamp the season. And I'm talking about, okay, if you lose on a field goal, that's still a good showing on national television. Sure. People don't know what Utah State is. They don't know what San Diego State is. But we're on Fox, and everybody's got a chance to watch us, and you are just absolutely terrible. Just terrible on both sides of the ball. Special teams, I don't want to hear about them having people out for COVID. Everybody's got people out for something. Mm-hmm. Like, to have two punt blocks, and your best player is the punter. It was just a poor showing for a team that's had a great year within a conference that means nothing. So speaking of something that means nothing to some, but everything to someone else, the Lions finally won a football game, y'all. Wow. It's over. Unfortunately for us, it is over. Because I thought they were going to lose every game. And if it wasn't for Mike Zimmer, they would have lost every game. Because if you watch the final play, I don't know any football team that tells their players, okay, on the last play from the 7-yard line, all the defensive backs stand in the end zone. Like, why? What? It's not a Hail Mary, fool. They're on the 7-yard line.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, a quick slant, 7-yard comeback, bang, game over, Lions win.
Yeah, man, for so long, all season long, I really, felt like that Vikings team was the best under 500 team kind of scrapping along all year long. And I just, I think they probably just took their eye off of this one going, hey, all the great games we've played against good teams all year long, we're going to walk into this one and be able to get out of here at least with an easy win finally.
They were down 20-6.
I know, and they just didn't show up, and they overlooked it. And the Lions are at this point in that desperation mode of, hey, every game we're just trying to not go 0-16-1, and that's what caught. But you're right, Zimmer. I mean, to let it even get to that point where you were down that early against a team like that, and you had to come back and try to pull one out, and then to lose it like that. Boy, that could just kind of be the thing that really kind of, takes the, gas out of the Vikings tank and just they may just limp along to the end of the season without really doing much. I thought maybe they'd have a little chance to make a charge into that wild card hunt where, they're all basically 500 or under 500, a game under 500 right now in the NFC. But after that, I don't see the Vikings, making up that kind of ground.
I thought Mike Zimmer was a decent coach. What this season has proven to me is that he should be the first coach fired. Matt Nagy should be second. The only reason why Zimmer should be the first coach fired because you lost to the Lions, my man. Like, they've got a game on. I think the only thing that saved him from being fired today, and he may still be fired by the time this is over, that they have a game on Thursday. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that saved Matt Nagy from being fired, is that they had a game on Thursday. And then they won that Thursday game, albeit against the Lions, at the very last second. If the Vikings win on Thursday, that might let him get to the end of the season, because the Vikings have talent. Kirk Cousins is a quarterback who can win games. Dalvin Cook is one of the best running backs in the league. They've got Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson at wide receiver. They've got good skill positions. They had one of the best defenses in the league. Everson Griffin is apparently losing his mind and trying to shoot people in his home. But they've got talent. The fact that Mike Zimmer can't even score points with that offensive level of talent and a decent offensive line, you can't employ that guy. He got to go.
Yeah, I mean, if they lose Thursday, they've got the 10 days. You would seemingly think he would be fired, and they'd have enough time to at least implement some type of regime change.
Something. Let Kurt be the coach. It don't matter. Get this guy out of here.
Yeah, it's just, I was, Zimmer's really, I think, been the difference from them being 2-3 games under 500 all year instead of being the 2-3 games over 500, which they probably should have been with the talent that you've mentioned that they've had. So, you know, second place in that division should have easily been theirs, and now they'll be, you know, scrapping to even hang on to that, an opportunity to finish second and far off into the wild card that they'll, you know, fall down to. So big disappointing loss for those Viking fans that started feeling like they had the kind of team that could, you know, make a strong run to right. the end of the season. Well, that just was just a huge, you know, step back losing to an 0-10-1 team. Oh, Lord.
You know what's funny about that game? Alex brought something up, and I'm interested to get your take on it. Aaron Rodgers has dominated that division. But right now, if we're looking at that division, the Bears have never had a quarterback in Aaron Rodgers' entire career. Okay, you can say Jay Cutler, but I wouldn't. The Lions have been terrible the entire time Aaron Rodgers has been the quarterback. And the Vikings have probably been good 3 years out of the time Aaron Rodgers has been the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. In theory, you could argue the AFC East, when Tom Brady was making his run, yeah. the Jets were bad, the Dolphins were bad, and what's the other team?
The Bills were non-existent.
And the Bills were non-existent. So those were easy wins. And you can probably argue as well, the NFC East has been terrible, period. And the Cowboys have had a cakewalk the entire time they've been in that division for the last decade. Is football bad and we just pretend that it's good because we like it so much?
Because we wait for it all week long, right. And we only have so many games to
think of it this way too. The Steelers have been great in that division. Until recently, Baltimore was okay. Cincinnati's been terrible. And Cleveland's roughly been terrible as well. Like, is football really good? Or are we just – we love it too much to really see it for what it is?
Yeah, you know, I thought like maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I thought there was a couple of real stale NFL seasons. And, you know, bad football maybe mixed with just bad matchups and just bad games. And I don't know if you remember that. But there was like you know, and maybe it was because the Browns were so bad going into the Baker Mayfield era. But I remember just feeling like that with a lot of, you know, like that's kind of when the Patriots, you know, they kind of restarted things at the end when they won those like two of the last three Super Bowls when they finally beat Atlanta. But they had that long gap. And even they were just kind of looked like they were kind of going through the motions for years.
Jason, let me ask you a question.
I feel like it's gotten better, but maybe you're right.
Jason. Look at the season. Any team can beat any team on any given Sunday. Mm-hmm. If any other sport had that, we would say this sport is terrible. Like, there's no, like, if there was no dominant team in the NBA, you'd be like, man, this season sucks this year. Yeah. If there's no dominant team in baseball, what do people say? The season sucks. Football is the only sport we will make excuses for two under 500 teams possibly making the playoffs.
Right, and wanting to watch that game.
Right, because in baseball, when it happens, we complain. In basketball, when it happens, we complain. Football is the only sport where we clearly have, across the league, a subpar season. And people are still excited as ever. Like we've got dominant. There's no dominant team. Who's the MVP this year?
Well, you know, I think even with a few games he missed, I like, you know, you see Murray come back and play as well as he is. I feel like the Cardinals are the only team that with Murray have been consistently the one team where you go, well, they're really good. And then everybody else, you're right, is just like any given Sunday, anybody can beat anybody. But I feel like a healthy Murray, man, the Cardinals do seem to stand out a bit. Now, they don't have all that experience.
Who talks about them, though?
Right, nobody talks about it. They don't have the lineage. There isn't an experience. They don't have Murray. Doesn't have playoff wins. There isn't all this, you know.
Cliff Kingsbury's a rookie.
A young history coach. Behind this team, but I feel like, and maybe that's good for them. Maybe it's good that nobody's talking about and a healthy Murray under the radar. They are definitely the standout team, possibly. But you're right. You go, ooh, the Buccaneers, and then the Buccaneers kind of go, ah, and then they come back, and then you never know what might happen in the next 4 weeks of whatever games they have left. The AFC North, I tweeted this 3 weeks ago, the AFC North, which is predominantly a, ooh, wow, all these good teams coming out of this division, or at least two of them every year, maybe if a, you know, a third. But I said, I don't know who the best team in the AFC North is, but whoever it is, they're not very good.
Right.
Yeah, right. Like even the team that wins that division isn't going to be a great football or a very good football team. They're just going to have won that division.
The Ravens were coming into this week. They were one of the best teams in football. They barely survived. Well, they didn't survive. They lost to Pittsburgh and they had a chance to win the game, but they should have blown them out. There are no dominant teams.
No.
We are entering a point where I think we may have stumbled on something on this show, that the NFL season sucks, but we love the NFL as a country and as a medium so much, the content that it provides, we cannot openly admit that it sucks, because if we did that, then what the hell would we be talking about? We got so much more left on the show. Brown and Lawhead, we'll be right back. Back on another, I guess in the second half of the Brown and Lawhead show here on the Mighty 1090. I'm John Brown. I'm joined by Jason Lawhead. If you missed anything on the show, you can always go like and subscribe to the podcast store on iTunes and find the Brown and Lawhead podcast. You can also go over to YouTube and see our lovely faces, and you can see a corner of my San Francisco hotel room, and you can see the lovely hat that Jason Lawhead is wearing, courtesy of the Laugh Factory.
Also, I want to say I'd be remiss.
You'd be remiss.
I feel like I'm an announcer in a baseball game. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention happy 84th birthday to my dad today. 84, guy looks amazing. I can only hope to make it to 84, let alone.
I don't want to live to be 84.
Well, if you look like my dad, you would, man, as active as he is. So, you know, many more to my dad. He's 84. He looks great. He's feeling great. I talked to him, had a great conversation this morning with him. So, I'm going to see him actually in a few days. I'm flying back to do a corporate gig in Cleveland. So happy birthday, Pops. He looks great. Sounds great. So anybody else celebrating a birthday today, happy birthday to you as well.
I always want to say I don't want to live that long.
Yeah.
By me constantly saying it, I'm pretty sure I'm going to live to be like 97. I'm going to hate every day after 84.
I used to do a bit on stage where I go, you know, I want to live a nice full life, but I don't want to live so long that when I finally die, people around you are like, finally, geez, oh man, I never thought that guy would go. You know, where you you're just there too long. Yeah. But no, my dad, hey, as long as he's sharp and healthy and doing stuff, I hope he lives, outlives me if he lives to be 120.
Yikes. Oh, no, no one wants to do that. Old man. Nothing works at that point. So over the weekend, we had some really interesting outcomes to games. And if you're just joining us here on Brown and Lawhead on the Mitre 1090, we were going over something that I thought I stumbled upon, this thought that the NFL may be down this year. We may be looking at a sucky year in the NFL, but as we say that, we just got through watching a game this weekend with the Chargers and the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, normally you would hear those two teams and you would go, ugh.
Yeah.
But the Chargers have a franchise quarterback. I'm not a fan, but Cincinnati has a franchise quarterback. They've got great skill position players in Joe Mixon and Ja'Marr Chase. The Chargers have Keenan Allen. They've got Austin Ekeler, who fumbles every seven plays apparently, but nonetheless. So this was a very good game between two playoff teams, two teams that are in position. They're not in the hunt. They're actually in position that if it ended yesterday, they would be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So this was a really good game. And I thought one of the things that stuck out from this game was the Chargers jumping out to a super quick lead and the air seeming to come out of their sideline when Austin Ekeler had two really key fumbles at two really bad times. And that seemed to turn the tide from what should have been a quarterback matchup. It turned into a who will make less mistakes matchup.
Right. Yeah. You know, this game reminded me a lot of the Browns-Bengals game where the Browns defense was able to get and stuff in the run early and then able to dial up the pass rush and tee off on Burrow and chase him down and create havoc. And, you know, that game led with the defense winning it and then giving the offense comfortable field position and the ability to kind of, you know, open up the playbook and get into their you know, sets where they want to, you know, play action or throw it down the field for big plays, which was allowed Herbert and the big turnover, you know, kick return really kind of gave him a big cushion.
Yeah.
Cincinnati though, short memory. I like that about Burrow. They were able to claw back a little bit before that fumble and almost, you know, change the momentum and outcome of that game. And then that huge fumble by Mixon was the difference. But, you know, I think the score was not as a blowout as it looked like because of that. But, hey, give the Chargers credit. They went on the road against a team that had been pretty hot, you know, in a cold weather scenario, not their cup of tea going back to play in Ohio in December. Staying alive, knowing that the Chiefs were probably going to go take care of business, you know, later that night against Denver and hold serve. Big win for them to continue to at least still even have a chance to win that division with another one against KC. And, hey, look, KC's offense is still struggling. Defense won that game again for KC. A lot of teams could have beat KC last night with a more competent offense, a more competent quarterback and things of that nature. So, KC, yeah, another win, but not a world beater win that they're used to, you know, putting on teams, especially a Denver-type team. So, hey, the Chargers have to feel real good about not just their performance, but feeling like they still got a chance to win that division with the way KC's playing.
Let's stick to that division. We're all ready to say the Chiefs are back, the Chiefs are back, the Chiefs are back. I don't know if it's Tyreek Hill's inability to now catch the football, which apparently someone joked and said he leads the league in interceptions after he's caught the ball, which
right in his hand. Yeah.
I don't know what happened to this guy. I really don't. He's always on the internet arguing he's faster than people. Maybe he should see if he can catch better than these people, because a lot of the times these are good passes he's dropping, and it's completely put this stale feeling on the Kansas City offense, because now it seems stalled in a sense. Cause that game really felt like Kansas City should have blown Denver out, because Denver's not good. I don't give a damn what someone wants to sit and tell me about Teddy Bridgewater and the Bronco defense after losing Von Miller. It's less is more type situation. The Chiefs should have blown them out of the water, period, end of story. But for whatever reason, the stagnant version of their offense just doesn't seem to hit that next level, because it's not like Travis Kelce isn't getting the job done. Their run game seems non-existent, and in addition to their run game being non-existent, Tyreek Hill is literally turning the ball over.
Right, which is making that playing the two deep safety easy for anybody.
Very easy.
A good defense or a bad defense, because if you're not going to be able to run on them like Kansas City just hasn't consistently been able to do to anybody, there's no fear in that. We feel like we can stop the run without loading the box, and we can play Tyreek Hill's a little soft underneath, and if he's going to drop balls, or we can keep him underneath the route and, you know, keep the two day safeties deep and be effective that way, it's really made life hard on Mahomes. You saw him getting frustrated last night, even on that long count false start. There's miscommunication at the offensive line because they're not able to just free will it down the field like they used to be able to in the past years. And if Tyreek Hill is, give him a step or two to keep him, maybe he'll, you know, drop the ball and get deflected. We'll have the ability to hold, bottle him up underneath, and especially that two safety deep that all these coaches are going against them now is working for everyone. And unless Andy Reid can kind of fix that, or Tyreek Hill just kind of flips the switch, they're going to have these kind of games. They're going to have to win these kind of games where the offense looks ugly and the defense has to show up, and we'll see how long they can keep doing that. But they're doing it.
I think one of the things that from that division that we also saw was the Raiders just full Raider at this point. Like, what do you make of the state that they're in right now? Because they go from being a game in it to now being really a game out of it, because it seems like there's been separation between Kansas City and Los Angeles, and there's clear now separation between Denver and Las Vegas and then the other two teams that I just mentioned. Because I do not see the Broncos figuring things out and catching up to what's happening. No. And I damn sure don't see the Raiders figuring out what's going on and getting back to the pack, so to speak. Because they just look bad now. They look like a team who lost their coach. They look like a team that's caught in some form of turmoil. Their wide receiver murdered somebody. And you just have other things going on. I don't know. Another cornerback waving guns on the internet. They now look like a team that visibly has all those problems.
Yeah, but they go into Dallas on Thanksgiving, and they win outright. I mean, they're going to get 8-point underdogs. They look really good throughout the game and hold on to their poise through the end of the game. And then you feel like, hey, you know, even though Washington's playing good and they've not only have they won, what, four straight, they've covered in all those games, they're coming in. But you got that chance. You're at 6-5. You got that chance to go 7-5 and stay in the division hunt of winning the division even still. And then you just go give that one away. That Washington defense without Chase Young, you got to score more than 15 points.
You got to score
them. And you can't just hope that your defense is going to stop. And then they're throwing the Hail Mary in the last few plays at the end in the end zone. It's like, why aren't you throwing something where you can get in the field position and get up there and clock it one time across. I mean, you're throwing it all the way to the end zone instead of maybe 35 yards across midfield to try to get something where you can get a foot on it and win the game. So I thought that was, you know, kind of a iffy type of play calling attack with that last possession that they had. But now I felt like them going 7-5, they still had a puncher's chance, right? They had the you know, a couple division opponents that they could still beat. They had the Browns, who's limping late in the season. Maybe they could steal a win and pick one off of them on their schedule. But now at 6-6, and with the Chiefs at 8-4 and the Chargers at 7-5, it seems like that's going to be the two-man race at the end of the season, and the Raiders are just kind of raidering them their way out, and they might go 9-8, but that's not going to be good enough. And I don't think in the AFC with the tiebreakers and the other teams that are, you know, there's going to be 10-7s all over the place. I feel like
there's going to be a bunch of 10-7s, and then there's going to be a lot of guys who are under 500. And I think for the first time in a long time, we are looking at a season. Because I think that was probably the year Seattle made it to the playoffs, and they had a below 500 record, and they won a playoff game at home.
The, I think that was 7-9. They beat the Saints because they won the division at 7-9.
Home game, right?
Saints were 11-5 wild.
Right, and it made no sense.
Right.
I think we're stumbling on one of those.
Yeah.
I really do. Because you brought up the Cowboys. You brought up the Thanksgiving game where the Raiders beat the Cowboys. But I'm also willing to ask the question, are the Cowboys good?
We right, don't know. They barely, like, you know.
Right. We get back to the central point of what really the show has been. What's happening? Is the NFL good this year? Because I say no. I say no because you don't know who's going to be who. Like right now, the Bills are playing the Patriots. I mean, we won't talk about the score because the show was previously recorded, but that's a dirty secret that nobody knows. But do you have any inkling of what's going to happen in that game? No one does. And that brings me to what happened with the Rams and the Jaguars. The Jaguars are bad. They're on the list of three bad teams. The Texans are bad, Jacksonville's bad, and the Jets are bad. Those are the three teams that we can all agree on. They're bad.
You can throw the Giants in there too. They're pretty bad.
But the Giants have actually won games against real opponents, or they've been close in games against real opponents. I can't say the same for the Texans. I can't say the same for the Jets. Oh, the Lions. I'm sorry, the Lions. I left the Lions out. Don't let me think of one way and fooled me, Giant Lions. Y'all still suck. But I'm watching the Jacks. I'm watching Jacksonville, and I'm watching LA. Is it me? Or does Trevor Lawrence look very average? Because I didn't see anything in that game that made me think that Trevor Lawrence is what people build him to be. Nor did I see anything from the Rams that made me go, okay, The Rams are back. Like, right. We're waiting to do with the Chiefs. I didn't see that because the Jaguars are just too bad.
Right, yeah. No, I'm not really impressed with Lawrence much. And I guess more and more you see him play, the more you realize, hey, he's not going against guys in the ACC every week. And
with the best players on his team at every position.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, I'm not going to write the guy off. I'm not saying he's terrible. He's got opportunities to grow in the next few years. I think next year is going to be the sophomore kind of, is he going to step up or is he even going to have an even more sophomore jinx? I think next year is going to tell a lot about his growth and the potential growth going forward. But one thing I'll give credit for is the Rams. I think that defense that, you know, obviously they were up against a wounded gazelle that they could, you know, circle one up and say, let's play some football. But the defense was able to do what people expect that defense to do, right? They were able to get guys, you know, they were able to get them into third down and quickly. But they've got to be able to do that against good teams going down the stretch. So was this kind of a game where the defense can kind of go back, look at some film and say, hey, even though we played a lesser opponent, these are the types of plays we're executing on. We've got to do this more as an 11-man unit instead of just some individual talented guys out there trying to make plays. So I think, if anything, you know, McVay was ready defensively, good or bad. But like you said, anything can happen any week. So that's still a good performance by the Rams in under those circumstances. They've got to build off of that and be able to execute defensively against good teams. And we're going to see if they can going forward.
I think one of the other things, because we will just talk about the NFL in general at this point. I think that the Seahawks somehow found a way to win against the 49ers. I would say I saw that coming. I thought one of the things that, because your Browns are off, so I'm going to bitch about my Bears.
Mm-hmm.
Any person who told you that Andy Dalton should have started over Justin Fields because Justin Fields needed to learn, please tell me you saw what they did this Sunday against the Cardinals. Because Andy Dalton had four of the most egregious interceptions. Four of the most gross interceptions I've ever seen a 10-year veteran throw. And I mean Geno Smith level atrocious. Like, these were bad passes. So what can you possibly learn from watching that guy be that bad? Like, this idea that he was better for the offense. The offense stunk. Like, literally, they stunk. They didn't score until the game was basically over, and you get these puff points. Well, the Cardinals are like, all right, let's not get anybody hurt. This game's basically over. So you post 22 points, and Matt Nagy goes to the press conference and says he thought Andy Dalton played well, which leads me to believe, what game were you watching, dude? Because you were there. You're the head coach. What were you watching that made you think that was a well-played game by Andy Dalton?
This guy just puts foots in his mouth almost every press conference. I mean, some of the things you're just like, what? Like, what? What do you look at? Yeah, like, besides, like, what game are you watching? Like, are you trying to lose your job? Do you know, is there something in your contract there in the buy, like, that you're just going to get? I mean, hey, look, at the end of the day, Justin Fields is actually probably in the best situation Justin Fields can be in. You know what? Let Andy Dalton show the world that Matt Nagy is clueless. Let Andy Dalton take the beatings, yes, and the losses as this season winds down. And it only will improve the want and the need for Justin Fields going into next year's training camp. And it'll only give, if Nagy's there, it'll only give him every reason to save his job if he's still there to play Fields and start with him next year. Or the new coach, it'll give him a nice kind of a momentum liftoff to be like, hey, I'm coming in here and I'm playing Justin Fields right away, because that's the only hope for this team. And Fields benefits, I think, right now by watching just this whole thing implode with the way Nagy's handled
it. I would argue that and we got a couple minutes, so I want to get, because I want to get your point on this too, because you're a good person to ask this question, because you've seen a lot of upper management situations. People want the Bears GM fired. And I'm telling people, pump the brakes. Here's why. He traded for Justin Fields. He traded for Khalil Mack.
Mm-hmm.
He got Roquan Smith, their best defensive player. He signed their one of the best pass rushers now in the NFL. I think he's third in sacks. You've got a premier corner, a second-round pick in Jalen Johnson. Like, he's drafted guys. Can you name a general manager that's hit on all his draft picks?
Oh, no, not at all. And even the most successful ones that are out there, they're absolutely not. I mean, that's one of the hardest things to do in the NFL as an executive is to know who to pick, really. And, you know, I mean, you have a 48-man roster. You have so many needs on 11 of them on each side of the ball, special teams. I mean, that's why they go into these war rooms, right? And, you know, some are better than others at it, but nobody's perfect. Nobody has the crystal ball of all crystal balls, that's for sure. I'll tell you what, here's something I want to pose to you. If you're Chicago, this is only just something I'm thinking, right? If you're Chicago, and let's say Harbaugh in Michigan wins it all this year. Oh. Harbaugh wins it all in Michigan this year. Do you step outside of yourself as the Bears and say, hey, we're going to throw the kitchen sink and actual money at a head coach for the first time in our career and try to lure him out of Michigan? Try to say, hey, come on back to the NFL. Now you only got to win a Super Bowl. You won the national title because I think he still wants that Super Bowl deep down. You know, I know that Michigan is the best job for him right now, but if he wins that title, what else is there to win there? He's held out. He's taken the pay cut to win it. He's an old ex-Bear. He, you know, hey, that would be great, right? I mean, a chance.
You got $12 million?
Hey.
Because that's what it's going to take, a 10-year, $12 million deal. And I'm not doing that, man. He runs too hot on people. He worked his way out of San Francisco. He ran his way out of Stanford. He was on his way to running his way out of Michigan.
That's the point, though. He's on his way to run, and he got it. He's got it done at least to get to the final. We'll see if he can muster up enough to win two games. It'll be a challenge, but they're playing really good football.
If Jim Harbaugh finds his way to, in one fell swoop, beat Georgia and then beat Alabama, because if they play Cincinnati, I think they'll beat Cincinnati, and then beat Alabama, oh, $12 million won't be enough. 15, you might have to look at 16. But we'll have to find out later. Brown and Law, hey, we'll talk to y'all tomorrow back at the home. Peace.
All right.